Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
Now celebrating 5 years of burning up the airwaves.
If I were the man I was 5 years ago, I'd take a flamethrower to this place.
You're listening to the voice of small business.
This is Dr. Fraser Crane. I'm listening.
He's Jim Blasingame, the small business advocate.
We're back. It's 34 after. Thank you very much for hanging around with me today. 800-531-3815, toll free coast to coast. And my website is www.jbsba.com. Don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter when you get there. And this week's article, the feature article, is titled Looking for Answers in the Wrong Places. And it's a little bit of a fable. I think you'll like it. I think you'll enjoy reading about that. So check that out when you get a chance. And it's all right there at jbsba.com, along with a lot of other good stuff. They're like 1,000 archives, hundreds and hundreds of articles. This show in a replay form, if you just can't get enough of my voice and you want to hear it over and over again, you can go there and do that. Or you can hear my guest this hour, Michael Cox. You can hear his wonderful voice over and over again. Michael is the Vice President and Chief Economist with the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas. He's a Pulitzer Prize-nominated author of Myths of Rich and Poor. But most importantly, for me, he's our friend. Michael, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Jim. Good to be here, really.
It's good to have you back. On this election day, by the way. And, Michael, recently, you know, you've been talking about free trade for a long time. I know you focused on it in your annual report this year, but you had an outstanding article in the Journal about 2 weeks ago, didn't you?
Yes, I did. It's called What Would Adam Smith Say? It's about the degree to which people are violating interstate commerce clauses implicitly. Most folks today, when they think about free trade, first of all, they just give it lip service. Everybody says, oh, yeah, I believe in free trade. And then what they're thinking is that for everybody else, but protection for me.
Right.
And of course, what they really work for is protection for themselves. And the sum total of all that is nobody, there's really not free trade. It's just protection.
Mm-hmm.
But usually when we talk about protection, we talk about what kind of things can be done to open up the U.S. economy abroad or, you know, vice versa, internationally. But the greatest violations of free trade going on right now are between states in this nation.
Mm-hmm. And give us an example.
Well, what has happened? Well, Georgia, actually, and North Carolina are the biggest violators of this free trade. Georgia requires buyers to purchase contact lenses in person. You can't get them through cheapcontacts.com and so on.
Right.
Oklahoma won't allow its citizens to be buried in a casket bought out of state.
Huh.
South Carolina inhibits internet mortgage brokers by requiring companies to maintain an in-state office with regular office hours. 13 states won't let consumers buy prescription drugs over the net. Every state has decided to restrict the sales of automobiles,
right?
Purchases of automobiles from other states. You know, lots more examples. What I did was to follow a line of research going on this subject by many professors at universities and by an institute called the Institute of Policy Innovation, and they had actually followed these professors too. Many professors at universities in economics departments and business departments have started to look at some of the things that states are doing, and you can get quite a large collection of material written on these violations.
Well, and it flies in the face of the marketplace, the way the marketplace is moving. It flies in the face of reason. It's like trying to hold back water when water is going to seek its own level, and you know, you've heard of hydrostatic pressure. Well, there's a market pressure to allow the free flow of goods and services wherever it needs to go, and we may not like it. It may hurt us. It may sting us today. But on the one hand, it may hurt us as a business owner until we adjust for it, but it immediately helps us as a consumer, doesn't it?
Right, and we really have to pay attention to our interest as consumers, number one, because if you look at what each one of us as an individual is both a producer and a consumer. We go to work being a producer, earn income with which we go be a consumer. Now, how far will the money that you earn as a producer go? It depends on the prices that you face in the markets where you go to spend that money. And if every market you turn to is protected, money is going to run out really fast. So we have to orient our laws towards our self-interest as consumers, not producers. Consumers want abundance. Think about that. Mm-hmm. Producers want scarcity. Mm-hmm. Every producer wants everybody else to go out of business so they'll have the entire market and can charge the highest possible price. Every consumer wants competition and plenty. And so, you know, which would you go with, plenty or scarcity? It's very obvious.
The thing that I focus on when with regard to free trade, Michael, though, is also are very heavily weighted on efficiencies. A lot of times people want protection because they aren't capable of operating efficiently. And I don't
Absolutely.
Think we should reward people. And I know Adam Smith and Frederick Bastiat, you know, said this many years, centuries ago, we shouldn't reward inefficiency with artificial protectionism. We're going to talk about this some more with our good friend Michael Cox right after these messages. It's 20 till. Stay with us.
I'll soon be with you, my love.
Back at 17 till, I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Let me remind you, coming up in the show straight ahead, Mark Mayberry will join us, and we'll be talking about taking care of our customers. Gary Schilling is going to be back on the show, and he's our deflation expert. We're going to find out if there's any deflation in the economy, and that's an area that Michael Cox, our guest this half hour, has dealt with a few times over the last couple of years. Annabelle Dodd is our telecommunications expert, and Ivan Meisner is one of our top networking experts, and so we'll be visiting with all four of those folks coming up in the show straight ahead. Michael Cox is our guest. He's Vice President and Chief Economist with the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas, and their website is dallasfed.org. And, folks, it's not your grandfather's Federal Reserve website. This is a rock and roll website. You want to check that out. And please be sure to order their annual report. Mike, can we still get that for free?
Oh, yeah. You can get all the last 10 of these, 11, I mean, of the Free Enterprise Series reports are right. Very good, and it will deprogram you from the constant drumbeat of negativism.
That's the truth. I really enjoy mine. And folks, you know, when you think of an annual report, you think of just a bunch of boring numbers. That's at the back. Those are way at the back. There's lots and lots of pages and pictures, too. If you like pictures, a lot of good pictures, too. Right, Michael?
We tell the story in every way possible.
That's right. Graphs, nice. It's really nice. You'll enjoy it, especially if you're interested in free trade, especially this one. Michael. And by the way, you can order it. You can go to dallasfed.org and order it. Did you tell me that you can also download it now?
Download the whole thing, color
you can,
and
you can
all
download
that.
All right, that's good. Good news.
Download the most recent one in Spanish.
Really?
Free trade, fruits of free trade.
Good for
right?
you.
We're going to order Chinese as well.
I said, as we went to the break, I said that my big argument against, my biggest argument against protectionism is it protects the inefficient. And the people who aren't willing to reinvest in better methods. And
or just
to me,
don't want to.
Yeah, I mean, to me, that's the major crime of protectionism, isn't it?
Let me tell you, let's suppose you work for the minimum wage rate for 10 weeks. That's 2.5 months. Here's what you can buy with that amount of labor. Now, this is a person flipping hamburgers at wherever, even McDonald's pays more than $5.15. That's the minimum wage for each $5.15. But let's just suppose you got a minimum wage job, $5.15, work 10 weeks. Here's what you can buy. For that money, for that work, you can buy a brand new 2.2 gigahertz computer, complete with everything, including monitor screen and color printer and all the stuff, built-in fax modem. You can buy a 19-inch color TV, a DVD player, CD player, a VCR, a microwave oven, a digital camera, an MP3 player, a financial calculator that cost $200, you know, just 20, 30 years ago,
mm-hmm.
and a whole list of others. Things, you know, small little refrigerator, and plus you can pick up a cell phone. Now that's for this is for minimum wage people for 10 weeks of work. Now none of those people can produce that stuff themselves, but they're just over there flipping burgers for 10 weeks, and in exchange for that labor, they get this whole raft of goods. Now why is that? Is it through work that they become that wealthy? No, it's through trades, through doing what you do best and trading for the rest. Now, if every one of those producers of the TV and the VCR and the microwave had tried to raise the price of their product through, you know, asking for trade protection and be the only producer, you couldn't have bought one of those things.
Right.
So trade is what makes us rich.
Did you?
And
go ahead. I'm sorry. No, go ahead.
What I was going to say is that we, You know, we have to get this right in our minds, because Adam Smith tried to teach us this 225 years ago in his book, The Wealth of Nations, but we're still resisting that basic truth.
Did you see recently where several state legislators are trying to hold President Bush hostage on some issues because they want protection from China on textiles?
Yes, I did. Did you know that China completely came over to America and disassembled a steel-making plant in Cleveland, bought the plant, took it apart, put it on a boat, took it over to China and reassembling it so they can, United States is, we reached the peak of our steel era in the late 1930s and 40s, well, 40s actually with the war. And those are hand-me-down industries, and we've shifted them on to other countries, and that's where they belong. We need to be doctors, lawyers, dentists, accountants, engineers, computer programmers, consultants, and all the other good
service
jobs.
But, Michael, what do we say? What do we say to the people who have just lost their job in a factory? What do we say to those people?
There's an article in today's Dallas Morning News. I think they should go interview other people who've lost their jobs. It's pink slips oftentimes are blessings in disguise. I personally I lost my job as a professor in 1984 when I didn't get tenure. You know, I was very upset about it. I cried about it.
You're
devastated. I had a family.
Yeah.
What?
Mm-hmm. You were devastated.
I had a family,
sure.
Three kids, a wife, wanted to, this was terrible, and I thought my life was over. There have been times today where I have made 10 times the amount of money I made back then.
Michael?
And more, actually.
I
have a better job, making more money, and I'm happy. And I'm doing what I do best now. I'm writing, it takes a little while to get into the job that you're the best at. And then things can change and you just get retrained. So there are
In the late 80s, I was downsized twice. Between 87 and 89.
Look where you are now.
From an executive, I was downsized twice. And within 3 years, after starting my own business after 89, after the second time, I said, you know what, I don't need help screwing up my life. I can do that by myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I started my own business, and within 3 years, I went back and thanked both of the people who downsized me.
I can tell you these stories so much. The current guy who owns the Houston Texans, Bob McNair, has the same story. He's a billionaire today, but he was broke not too long ago because his first business failed.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Michael, hold on to that. Hold on to that thought. We're going to continue to reconcile some of these things, though, because free trade does have issues. There are some challenges, and we're going to get Michael to help us sort some of those out right after these messages. It's 10 till. Stay with us. We'll be right back with Michael Cox, Chief Economist with the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas. We're back at 7 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. We're getting jiggy with our good friend Michael Cox, co-author of a book called Myths of Rich and Poor, which is still available. I recommend it to you folks. It'll open your eyes on a lot of different things, and it also was nominated for a Pulitzer Prize. So, folks, that tells you a little bit about what kind of quality work that Mr. Michael Cox puts out when he does it, when he works, and when he produces his information, and that's the reason why I encourage you to check out his annual report at the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas, and that's dallasfed.org. Michael, help us reconcile some of this. As I said earlier, when free trade happens, there are losers. There are winners and there are losers. And sometimes the losers, there are a lot of losers. And so we need to deal with those people. How do we talk to those people? You can say start your business or retrain or whatever, but for a while it still hurts, doesn't it? And there's some pain there.
Yeah, I think the best thing is to put them in contact with other people who have been there, done that, and have emerged way, way, way ahead. They need comfort. They need what they don't need is some congressman coming around saying, I'll take care of you. Life is bad. It's clearly cruel and unfair. Now vote for me and give me money and I'll help.
Right.
I'll help get you some protection. Here's a good quote from William Bork Cochran, which one of my favorite quotes, who talks about the difference between free trade and protection is that under a system of free trade, the excellence of the product is the only means by which it can secure a market, while under protection, an inferior article can dominate the market through the aid of legislation.
Right.
That's exactly what happens. Like you said, inefficient or people who just, you know, just want to, you know, push out the competition will go to Congress, say, I'll give you money for your campaign. I'll support you. If you'll support me, so when you get elected, you put this trade restriction on sugar. There's a handful of sugar farmers down in Florida who pocket an extra $400 million a year because they have driven U.S. sugar prices up to be four times world prices.
Mm-hmm.
We pay four times as much for sugar in this country as the rest of the people in the world do per 100 pounds, per pound, whatever, because of this protectionism. We don't allow ourselves to import foreign sugar. Now, that's making one small family rich, and it's making everybody pay an extra $40-$50 a year for their sugar.
Mm-hmm.
But it hurts downstream candy and soft drink producers. If we protect the United States from cheap Canadian lumber, we hurt the downstream home building industry.
Right.
If we protect the steel industry, you know what? The Caterpillar has virtually gone, you know, is finding it very difficult to produce their equipment because the steel or is protected, and it drives up the price of all that heavy equipment.
When the president installed his steel tariffs a couple of years ago, he helped about 15,000 jobs, but he hurt hundreds of thousands of steel of jobs where people work with steel. They don't make steel, but they work with steel.
Exactly. And foreign companies said, you know, you did that to us. Well, you did it to get a few votes in a few
right.
states. Well, we're going to target the other states that you, where you're, you know, kind of on the margin.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to target those states, and we're going to put protection on those products for our countries, and so they won't, it'll hurt those other jobs as well.
Mm-hmm.
It, you know, we're going, that's the wrong way to go. We should open up doors, not shut them down.
Well, and it's certainly, as we're trying to, you know, trying to protect ourselves from China, it might be, you know, I can see where that would make sense to some people short run, but when you think about the consumption that China can produce over the next 20 years, I mean, we need to be making those guys happy over there. We need to be trading with them. We need to be figuring out how to open up borders with them, because
they
it
are.
Won't be long before they could have a trade imbalance with us.
And they're buying, they're importing, their imports are shooting, have shot up more than their exports in percentage terms. So they're definitely
right.
doing it. You know, when the Internet came into this country, it did the same thing basically as the train did. The
right.
Internet is our first experience in trading information. The train wasn't goods. If we had, when the train came in, it suddenly made people in Ohio possible to buy lumber up in the Pacific Northwest.
Mm-hmm.
If we had prohibited that, then every, you know, we would have, if we had prohibited that kind of thing, Detroit would have never developed an auto industry. Every state would have had to hold it.
Right.
The manufacturing would have never gone to Indiana and specific states.
Mm-hmm.
We'd have had a bunch of inefficient manufacturers everywhere. Oil could not have been just in Texas. It would have had to try to produce it everywhere. Furniture and the Southeast wouldn't have happened. So, you know, we let things, the chips fall where they were made back then, and this nation greatly benefited from it. But we're trying to protect ourselves from this wonderful thing today.
Yeah. Well said, Michael, and we're going to have to let that be the last word. Thank you for being here. As always, it's a lot of fun to have you on the show. Thank you for your time and your information.
Take care, Jim.
Okay, Michael Cox, ladies and gentlemen, he'll be back, I promise. He's Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas Chief Economist and Senior Vice President. I got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners. This is Jim Blasingame, the small business advocate, and this program really is for you.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.